as opposed to just to a showing that it is subject to competition. And we are not opposed to that concept necessarily, so long as the standards for dealing with that single service are not so onerous that it effectively bars us. What we'd like to point out to the committee is currently all competitive providers of toll service in Oregon, which includes every provider with the exception of AT&T and PNB, price their services on a deregulated basis. AT&T prices their services on a flexible basis subject to a cap. Only PNB is left to price its services under the traditional price its toll services under the traditional rate making process, and that would continue under this unless and until we can meet the standards that are set forth in Section 4 with regard to the toll services. That brings me to the concern over the standards. I sort of obey my right to comment on Section 3, Parts A through C, because they appear to be less onerous, but subsection D, which says that it is that the action is unlikely to cause any undue harm to any customer class, I think is a standard that we would prefer to see eliminated. Right now, any pricing change under a fixed revenue requirement under the traditional form of regulation has an impact or harm to a customer class. I'll give you an example. If you drop the amount of the carrier common line or a part of the non-traffic sensitive costs that are collected under the carrier common line charge, that is reduced. That revenue has to be picked up elsewhere, and it's generally picked up through local exchange services or basic services. There is a perceived harm to those people for having to pick it up. And so we think that subsection D is inappropriate and may be likely to scuttle any chance of ever implementing a standard.
Could I ask at this point, Jack, what was contemplated with the addition of D? Because this comes out of the discussion after I left, I assume.
I think probably it's more appropriate for some of the other people in the room to address this point, because we were sitting around the conference table this morning creating standards, and fairly well agreed, I think, among the group that A, B, and C were acceptable, including acceptable to PNB, but there was some controversy about D. We dropped D in there because we wanted to present it to the committee, but I was not arguing for it or against it, or neither was the PUC staff, as far as I know.
We'll ask others.
Okay, I've got to clarify one thing Jack said, and that is that A, B, and C are relatively acceptable to PNB's lawyer, and maybe not to PNB.
That's correct.
I understand that.
Okay. He has limited authority.
Damn limited. Finally, my concern, my final concern is found in subsection 5, where it says price listed services for which price and service competition do not exist. My concern is that is the standard for deregulating a service, and so the net effect of this is that if a service is not capable of being deregulated, then a maximum price must be set on it. And so what we suggest is the standard subject to competition be inserted in there, and if I might, what I would suggest is following price listed services, strike the term for, then following which, strike price and service, and insert are not subject to competition, then strike do not exist. And I'll be glad to give you my copy of that sheet.
I think is that, I mean, what, I guess of the Is there any substantial difference other than it doesn't reflect the language that's already in another part of the law? Between saying, well, there is, because that's what the whole argument is on the basis of the other, whether it's...
subject to competition or price and service competition.
Whether it's not subject to competition or whether price and service does not exist.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, we did not discuss this particular point this morning or yesterday for that matter, and so I had no comment on it, and I don't think the staff has made a comment on that point either yet.
Okay, we'll flag that. Okay. I'm not sure what we'll do. Let me explain though, that my intent is I would like to send this on to the full committee tomorrow because of our time problem. That does not preclude some further discussions of items that come up in this committee that we may not take action on in the subcommittee. That does not preclude the opportunity to clarify or to reach agreement and to offer further changes when we get to the full committee, at least as far as I'm concerned. But so if we don't take action, we can at least, if we don't delete or change, we can at least flag at this point for continued discussion.
Mr. Chairman, to clarify our position on that, it is not our intention to limit the ability of the commission to fix maximum rates where there are no alternatives available, but we read this in conjunction with the remainder of the law and find that to be the standard for deregulation, and applying that, it would appear to impose an obligation to fix a maximum price on every service that would not otherwise be deregulated. Those are our comments for the time being. We'd be glad to answer questions.
Okay. Representative Anderson, do you have any questions?
Well, it's fairly clear what parts of the bill are under question. And they seem to be several. I'm not sure what the chair wants to do about moving this bill to full committee. I suppose we're going to hear from some other people, but whether you want to send it as it is or a more acceptable to some people
I guess that in part depends on whether or not Representative Berea gets here at a certain point. You and I can send it to the committee as is. We may end up having some disagreements at this point, or reluctance to make some changes. There may be some things that you and I could agree on that need to be changed, and we may pursue that. Representative Berea gets here fairly soon, then. Otherwise, I would like to send it to the committee and pursue. And I only do that primarily because of time and probably because we're going to be told to come down to consumer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to do that, but I want to make it perfectly clear that the bill in the present form needs a lot of work.
It needs some decisions that need to be made about certain points, yes.
True.
We can do some of that if we can agree. If we can't agree, then we can't do that. We can hold it up if you want to have further discussions, but I think this is important legislation, particularly to some folks. It's legislation that the task force asked for, and I'd like to get it moving since I'm fairly worried about our timeline, particularly after seeing how things are stacked up in the Senate side on the Consumer and Business Committee, which since you and I have spent hours down there trying to get in, I think we both understand that. Maureen, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Maury Astley, Oregon Independent Telephone Association. A couple of really the same points, so I'll just go over them quickly. One of my biggest concerns is what we're doing to House Bill 2200 on page 2. And I'd still like to recommend that we leave the old standards and drop the or on line B of subsection 3, if you're on page 2, of the part that's bracketed for removal. And we think price and service competition is a good standard that you can show is much better than marginal cost. And I understand Ed's concern, but I think if you look at the way that we provide services as opposed to the way competitor provides services, you'll see that it's, I think it's somewhat unfair to try and get our marginal cost in line with somebody else's marginal cost, even using price as a comparison. I think you already do that when you look at price and service competition. That's the real test, is somebody out there selling something and are they taking a share of the market? You know, if you've shown that, then the fact that we can offer something out of the CO for 50 cents and they might have to offer an actual piece of hardware that you buy for a one-time $50 charge, I don't think is as relevant. On the other hand, a competitor might offer some of these same services as part of a PBX, and so they'd have a similar low cost. How do you show that they might be adding some features basically at no rate? Just if you buy this PBX, you get call forwarding or you get speed calling or whatever. So I think we're talking about providing similar services with various kinds of equipment, and I think the better test is price and service. We would agree that that it's hard for us to make a case for expected competition in the future. I think if you just look at the major area of competition in long distance and see Satellite Business Systems has been bought out because of some of their problems. We recently had ComNet filing bankruptcy. They're a fairly good sized competitor in long distance. Even if you look at the major guys who are supposedly very successful in market share, they've had some real red ink years. So when you start getting into little guys providing call forwarding devices, I just think that's real tough. And we would willingly put the section C in there that says the commission can re-regulate it. We feel that's already in 2200, but if they're not comfortable and they want it reiterated another way or another place, then we would accept that. And I felt originally as we went through all this that the concern was the fact that you had two standards for competition, and one was just a very general one, and we'd agree to just drop that out and add the rehearing in. So what I'm suggesting is not add these additional sections except for C that's proposed, and drop the OR out of B and the old subsection C.
So you just leave price and service competition.
Right. You'd have long-range incremental cost, you'd have price and service competition, and you'd have re-regulation capability. I think that's enough protection. If there's price and service competition and you can show that and the commission can review that at some future date and say, well, those don't exist anymore, or you've driven somebody out of business, we're going to re-regulate you, that's enough protection. And then going to the social contract language, most of my concerns have been taken care of, and so I kind of lean towards PNB and United as far as does this do what they're trying to do. Those four standards that are suggested on page 6 and 7 under section 4 sub 3, I think it's a lot of that's just going to be, we're going to say we think this is true. You know, how do you prove what you think is true? I mean, how many facts can you gather to comply with a test for future competitive conditions? I mean, I think we will argue the balance between the need for price flexibility and protection of the consumer. That would probably be a part of anything you're trying to do, and particularly where you're going to want some automatic adjustment clauses or something like that. I'm hoping that the words undue harm is the protection in this fourth sentence, D, if that language stays in there, because any time you do the kinds of shifting around that we're going to be doing, as we have in the past, certain classes of customer or certain services for a class of customer are going to have varying degrees of profitability and subsidies in them. And so if you're adding a subsidy or removing a subsidy, somebody is going to have some harm, you might say. And I suppose if you just say undue harm, then you're qualifying how much is business going to continue to subsidize local residential rates. You know, is that the argument? We're designing this thing to allow certain services and class of services maybe to continue to subsidize local residential rates. And so any change you make is still going to increase or decrease the amount of so-called harm to that class. The section 5 there that Larry has talked to on price and service competition. Again, I thought we were working on more of a price listing kind of scheme, not a deregulation kind of scheme. And I'm not sure on this section if it's good or bad. I'm trying to look at it from how it would be used by us. And it says, upon request of an affected person, the commission shall fix maximum rate levels. And I'm not sure what that means to me. Does that mean if P&B changes some of their listed rates, like directory assistance or toll rates, that we as an affected person could come in and do that, or could one consumer come in and object and require a maximum rate by the commission on a particular service?
And can you clarify that, Jack?
Yes.
All of the above.
That's right. That's the way it's written. And the person that asking for the maximum rate has to show that there is no competition, price and service competition, as it's presently set up. He's got to make that kind of showing.
They suggested change, and I'm getting in deep water here. Or upon request of an adversely affected customer.
No problem.
Problem.
That's the way I was using person.
Is that, Mr. Chairman, members of the Representative Anderson, from our standpoint, although that makes the customer have to have an adverse impact, it still imposes the standard to fix maximum rates on any service that wouldn't otherwise be found to be deregulated, and I think that really voids the type of flexibility that we're looking at for.
Let me pursue this a little bit. The question here is really, we have in the existing statutes requirement for or standard for deregulation, which is really price and service competition. We have in existing statutes a standard for price listing of local exchange, either subject to competition or non-essential. And the difference between our price listing and de-tariffing and our deregulation is one is subject to competition, the other is price and service competition. And what you're arguing is that essentially this is price listing and not deregulation. It ought to be subject to competition.
Exactly.
Rather than the price and service.
Exactly.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, one other thing on page 6. I guess I would just like to reserve for maybe future comment on section 4 sub 2 about this, I guess, is the ATT paragraph. I believe that we support the flexibility for AT&T to price list services and be competitive, but since they're our major provider, I'm not exactly sure how that would affect us. It's something that I need to look at a little more closely. I think that I'm okay on that paragraph, but it just raises a little warning flag to me.
Okay. Thank you. We'll go back through some of these and see if there's some changes we want to go through the other folks first.
Thank
Jack,
you.
Do you want to... I don't know. Is it a floor session?
3:30.
3:30, yeah.
I've got to leave for about 5 minutes and sign up.
I'd like to see if we can get out of here shortly after 3:30.
I don't get any company.
if you're welcome to Bob or somebody else wants to come up, that's fine. Okay. What I'd like you to address is primarily the degree to which some of the concerns you've had have been addressed, particularly in this morning's discussion. We had the discussion focused on the standards, whether or not they were findings or whether or not they were considered, and whether or not there was review. We are at this point where they are findings, there is review, and the language on the standards of what has to be found is somewhat different than what we came in with. I wasn't part of that, so one of the things I'd particularly like to know is what your feelings are now about the way the standards are written and the way the that process is.
Recognizing that I'm in much the same position that Larry is, and not having been able to check with all of my clients on this thing, I can say that pretty much all of our concerns have been addressed in the latest draft. I guess it's the 1 o'clock draft. They've been changing now. the AM and PM version. This version, I think, adequately addresses most of our major concerns. I can't think of anything else that's worth bringing up at this hour. It does adequately address the our major concern, which was that there be some kind of findings by the commission.
Excuse me, Jack. Could you identify yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. Jack Landau, L-A-N-D-A-U. I represent Tracer.
Sorry, can I repeat?
That's okay. The four findings are adequate. I don't think they're terribly difficult or onerous on the telephone companies, and I think they will create the kind of a record and provide the kind of information that the commission will need to make a reasoned decision on this kind of alternative regulation. I think it's real important that Section 5 concerning the maximum rate levels remain there. That's of real importance to us. So that the basic idea there is that you're allowing pretty much wholesale price listing of the services. There may not be competition for some of those services. We want to make sure that people aren't subject to monopoly pricing. Whether you use price and service competition or subject to competition, it seems to me pretty much the same thing. I'd like to point out that in Section 2 of 757.825, subject to competition is the standard for deregulation, just like price and service competition. So I don't think you're getting anything by changing the words one way or the other. And at this point, we're content with price and service competition. I would like to respond to one thing that Larry said about the deregulation standard that has the marginal cost of the petitioner being compared with the price of the competitor's service. And Larry said that it penalizes the telephone companies for being more efficient. I think this misses the point. The basic idea is that you don't want to deregulate a monopoly, and one of the most common ways of identifying a monopoly is that it has economies of scale. It has efficiencies that nobody else can possibly meet. And that's all this is trying to do, is identify whether or not those economies of scale exist. That's it. And I think that's entirely appropriate for trying to determine whether or not it is appropriate to deregulate a service. That's about all I have to say.
Okay. Larry, do you want to add anything? Bob, excuse me.
Robert Gray, with the law firm Preston Thurgerson Ellison Holman in Portland, representing MCI. First of all, as I'm in the same position as just about everybody else, I have not spoken with my clients. I'm giving my observations as outside counsel. I can't be stating MCI position without speaking to them about the particular
address. There's no assumption that anybody is stating anybody's position except perhaps me.
Okay. Well, and the other thing is MCI in the past has expressed concern about developing a social contract legislation. I understand that you have asked us to put those objections aside and address the specific draft, and it's on that basis that I can even speak about the draft. I guess I agree with Jack's response to the concerns that PND has about including the marginal cost analysis in the deregulation section in 757.825. It seemed to me to be a reasonable standard to include in a situation where you are requiring.
Bob, can you pull the mic a little bit
I'm
closer?
Sorry.
I'm not sure that people in the back are hearing you.
It seemed to me to be a reasonable standard to include in a section which, after all, requires the commission to deregulate a service after the particular findings are met. This is not a discretionary section. It's a mandatory section. And so the indicator that the staff came up with seemed to be a reasonable indicator. It seemed to be evidence that would lead to the conclusion that price and service competition exists. I understand Mr. Astley's, Maury's concerns that in some cases there may be a lumping of services, but that's an inevitable situation in any economic analysis, and I don't really see that that would be a bar to analyzing the price for services in what's supposed to be a competitive market, after all. And if the evidence is not there and the market doesn't have this array of services that you can compare, then after all, I think you've really got to, the commission really has to ask the question of whether there is sufficient competition. So I do have some concerns about those objections. In terms of the criteria, they seem to be, under the circumstances, reasonable criteria, keeping in mind that, again, we do not support social contract legislation. The criteria that no ratepayer shall be unduly harmed, or no ratepayer group, and I don't even have the PM version in front of me.
So customer class, unlikely to cause any undue harm to any customer class.
Yeah, seems to be a reasonable trade-off when you're considering, after all, that this is a deal between the utility and the regulating commission, whereby the commission must satisfy itself that in concept the program that's being proposed will make everyone better off. Otherwise, there's no real reason for the commission to accept the social contract that the utility is proposing. And along with that, it seems reasonable to expect that they should be able to demonstrate that there's no serious adverse harm to a customer class. That's really all I have to say.
Yeah, following up on what Bob said, if I can, Mr. Chairman, I think Maury Astley was right when he said that the operative word there is undue. That was the intent. We were one of the people that suggested that this might be appropriate. It's the same language that's used in the utility statute when it speaks of undue discrimination, for example. Obviously, I mean, as a business customer, I can tell you there's plenty of discrimination. We're usually on the butt end of it. But the question is whether or not it is undue, and that's the aim of subsection D there as well.
Thank you. Any questions? I want to thank both of you because I know I set some conditions, which was to set aside the objection to the whole social contract idea in the first place. I really appreciate your contribution, your willingness to sit in with the understanding that probably going to do something that you didn't want to do in the first place. So I really do appreciate your contribution and willingness to participate.
Thank you.
Jim, do you have a couple of things you want to bring up?
Mr. Chairman, members, we support the draft that you have provided by the PUC and support the logic that Jack Landau presented to you. On page 7, section sub 5.
Jim, you also need to identify yourself.
Oh, pardon me, Jim Bruno.
We've all gotten so familiar here that nobody has to introduce themselves anymore.
Jim Bruno, Oregon Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. We would like to have the protection of fixing maximum rate levels or caps for price-listed services. And so I don't understand why there even needs to be that additional language for which price and service competition do not exist, because price-listed services, which are fall under the regulation of the Public Utility Commission, should have the protection that this subsection provides to us. So you might want to look at that and see if you even need that those words in there for which price and service competition do not exist. The what I provided to you is you've heard us raise time and time again over the last several years of discussion. The whole crux of the issue for us is how you define essential services, and we think what we have here is a very modest but helpful amendment to the bill under subsection 6 after the first line, and that is essential services shall include services provided to businesses which depend upon those monopoly telephone services as an inseparable an integral part of the telecommunication business services these businesses provide as their primary business service. I spoke with representatives of PNB, and my earlier draft, which is not handwritten, was too broad for them. And I think what I've done here is really screwed it down to those small businesses that their primary business services is really entirely dependent upon the monopoly services they purchase from the local telephone company. And we think this is a very modest protection, and we hope that the committee will add this to the bill and will make the issue much easier for us to contend with.
Let me ask PNB if at this point they've looked at this new language and they have any reaction to it, whether it is acceptable, more acceptable than the other, or at this point not acceptable. I mean, I think essentially what you're getting at here, Jim, is you want to define essential as some service upon which someone who makes their business off of selling a telephone service.
That's correct. The logic of it is that this plan allows the utility to price flexibility. And for these types of small businesses, this is the largest portion of their costs. And when you have this kind of price flexibility, this can dramatically impact these kinds of businesses, whereas it wouldn't so much a real estate agent or other types of small businesses.